Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean-Lefort Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at d1baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We are here to recap week six around the SEC, week two of conference play. And the more we learn, the less we know, Mark. I feel like that's kind of where we're at. Although I do feel like we do know that every week, if you're going on the road in the SEC, life is going to be difficult. That's one thing we do know. You wrote about that in the Weekend Dish. The record for home teams so far in SEC play is frankly absurd. I think winning 71% of games are home teams across the SEC. So that's not shocking in and of itself, but that number itself is shocking. 71% is a high number. So, we will get into the individual results for week six here in just a second. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by PitchLogic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See PitchLogic.com for more information. But yeah, Mark, I just, you know, I think that the example that kind of proves the rule that people might not think about is you look at a team like Kentucky that just beat the brakes off of Georgia 2 weekends ago. Mm-hmm. They go to Mizzou and you're thinking, well, with as much as Mizzou struggled against Arkansas the week before, like this is Kentucky, they got a chance to sweep. And they went to Columbia, Missouri. And frankly, that was closer, even though Kentucky won the series, it almost felt like it was closer to being a Mizzou sweep than it was a Kentucky sweep. I mean, Mizzou had a chance in all three games. One of the losses was extra innings. And then Sunday's game was kind of a back and forth deal. So to me, that's the one that proves it above all others, is that a team that, you know, played as well as Kentucky did 2 weeks and 2 weekends ago goes and plays a team on the road that we don't have a good feel for, hadn't played well. And they still had to really fight tooth and nail just to get the series win.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's going to be one of those years where you get two at home, you try not to get swept on the road, and then that gets you to 500. And then anything you do beyond that is how you're going to win the league. Okay. So you're Arkansas, you go to Auburn and you take two. You're Florida, you go to Baton Rouge and you get two. That's how that's going to work. Okay. And maybe you get a sweep at home. Okay. So certainly there'll be some of those as we saw this weekend. But that, I think otherwise you're going to have a whole lot of teams right in that 13 to 16 to 17 win, you know, range, and there's not going to be very much difference between them. You know, it's what you did in non-conference. It's how some of that is comprised, you know, who you eat within the conference, that sort of stuff. This kind of determine the pecking order. But I really do. I think you're onto something here. This is going to home team is the default choice from now on, right? And you would pull up when you're playing Missouri, but as you saw this weekend, Missouri, I mean, they were very competitive. They certainly had their opportunities to, as you said, to sweep, not just to hang around and play spoiler. I mean, there was a whole lot of difference, right? And that's what you're, that's not going to be the exception. I think, you know, at home, Missouri is going to be hard, hard to deal with. On the road, you might be able to have your way with them. But even the top teams in the league, you know, the most talented, we'll call them, you know, the Arkansas, you know, Florida, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, that you go on the road and you're going to have some issues. And especially with teams that are struggling on the mound. I mean, maybe you take Arkansas out of that, but if you're not consistent and you don't know what you're going to get from week to week, that's going to add to that volatility and make you more prone to upset. I think, you know, the exception to that would be Arkansas, because they, for the most part, they've gotten good starting. You know, Molina's had maybe one start. It wasn't great. Tiger wasn't perfect this week either. It's kind of for the first time. So maybe, you know, maybe even they're vulnerable. They just have so many options. If one guy doesn't, you know, isn't dealing, then, you know, just tap the next guy on the shoulder and he probably will be. So I think that's what's going to make this season different. I think it's always been good, but I think there's such little margin for error between these teams, because they're so close together, that, you know, that home crowd, the home confidence, all of that sort of stuff can put them just over the top, you know, to give that edge when the teams are so closely bunched together.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, it was just, you looked at last weekend, and it was almost every team that we thought we had a strong viewpoint on coming out of the first weekend of SEC play, it was almost like just a complete script flip of that. I mean, we'll talk about some of these series, but I mean, how different did Georgia and Alabama look this weekend, this compared to the weekend prior, right? I mean, that's probably the most stark example between two teams coming together, even more so than Kentucky and Missouri. But yeah, so we'll get into some of the individual series and we could talk about that. But I feel like it makes sense for us to start with South Carolina and Vanderbilt for a couple of reasons. One is I was there, but also I think that is the most interesting result there. And in this case, I think interesting for me means not totally sure what to make of it. Because there were a lot of things happening here. South Carolina pitched well. Eli Jones pitched great on what would have been Friday, but it was a doubleheader. So the first game of the doubleheader Saturday, retired the first 18 batters he faced, got a bunch of ground ball outs, did it really efficiently through six and a third innings with 77 pitches. It's incredibly efficient. So you like that. Tyler Pitzer, the freshman in the finale, was great. And then in between, in the middle game that they won, it was kind of a staff day, but they were able to kind of load all of their top relievers on that one day. Like, you know, we saw Ty Good and Garrett Gainey, primarily in that game. Chris Veach pitched in that game. So they just had it set up really well for their pitching staff, which is, you know, kind of built more on depth than on star power. And so on the one hand, I want to get really excited about South Carolina's starting pitching, but then you look at the flip side of it. And is this more of a matter of some of the questions we had about Vanderbilt's offense coming back around after, for a while, we thought that they had actually figured it out. And so I don't know how to feel about that. And then on the flip side is, you know, South Carolina's offense has felt at times kind of stagnant. I came out of the Clemson series earlier this season talking about, it just feels like a lot of the baseball equivalent of in basketball when four players are standing around watching one guy dribble, like whatever the baseball equivalent of that's what it was. That's what it felt like. But this weekend they got clutch hitting. They got contributions up and down the lineup. Ethan Petrie really came alive. He'd been, I would say, pseudo slumping. Like, he hadn't been awful, but it was not the Ethan Petrie that we had seen from last year, but he really turned it on this weekend and it really took over the game, especially in the second game of the doubleheader Saturday. And obviously we're believers in Vanderbilt's pitching. So, like, is it just that South Carolina had a good weekend? Is it that the lineup is fully realizing its potential? And so that's what makes me kind of fascinated by this series, is I just am not entirely sure what to make. I mean, Vanderbilt's not as bad as they looked last weekend, clearly. I don't think South Carolina is probably as good as they looked last weekend. Like, I don't think Tyler Pitzer is going to come out there and just be like this supernova phenom of a freshman every weekend. I think he showed enough to where if you're South Carolina, you feel good about running him back out there next weekend. But banking on him doing what he did against Vanderbilt again is probably foolhardy. So, you know, just much like in much like how sometimes the most provocative things you read are things that make you think and make you not sure of what your conclusion is. I think that's true of this series, where I come out of it being intrigued, but just totally scrambled in terms of what I feel about it. Maybe you can help me sort through some of it, Mark, because I really don't know.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we wondered about with South Carolina is how would they handle, you know, a strong offensive lineup. And Vanderbilt has had their moments where they've been that. And then maybe they've had some moments that give you pause. And certainly this weekend was one of them. And that's kind of the deal. You don't know how much of it was South Carolina, how much of it was Vandy, how much of it was, you know, we all like to say it's a little bit of both, right? And it probably was. But I think that as well as Vanderbilt had played versus Auburn and just absolutely demolished an Auburn pitch staff, and then turn around and not be able to have, I mean, just have limited success, you know, in the three games and get swept. That is, you know, a complete 180. And that's the part that's kind of puzzling for me. They weren't the only team to go through that, you know, as we've talked about. So it's going to be fascinating to see. I mean, Vandy's got Missouri next week. If you're going to have a get right weekend, that's probably preferred opponent. If South Carolina, they've got to go on the road and they'll play Alabama, who's been really good at home, and you know, and they face planted this weekend in Athens. So, and they're having some pitching issues. So you're catching them kind of in transition, I believe. So if you're South Carolina, that, you know, that's, you know, that's a winnable series for them. If you play, you know, if South Carolina plays as they did last weekend, then they probably do. They probably go in and win it. But then, you know, then it's all, you know, hey, last week's projections off of the first week. And week two was not a whole lot like week one for a lot of different teams. So is this going to continue to be volatile, or are we going to start to see some trends that we can actually learn something from? And, you know, to your point, I don't know what to make of South Carolina or Vandy or Alabama, you know, that we can talk about. Or for that matter, Alabama's opponent, Georgia. You know, all four of those teams did not do what I expected them to do this weekend and on the side of the ledger. So really confusing week, but it's also fascinating because, you know, you are dealing with, you know, 19 to 23 year olds, you will get some inconsistent results, and that's just part of the deal, especially when, you know, as we kind of talked about earlier, that I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between these teams. It's going to be who's feeling it that day, who's throwing strikes and who's healthy and all those sorts of things. And, you know, and who's at home.
Yeah. So I tried to kind of, knowing this is how I was going to have to first talk about this series, I kind of tried to force myself to compartmentalize some things that I feel most confident in. So, you know, with South Carolina, I do think Eli Jones is a real Friday guy. Now, he's not to use Mark Kingston's term, he's not the sexiest Friday guy there is. Like it's a sinker, not a riding fastball. It's 92, not 96. So it's not a wipeout breaking ball. It's a cutter, you know? So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's just not what you're used to with SEC Friday guy, but I think he's effective enough. Like, I think he strikes me as being ready for that. So that's one thing. The Vanderbilt side, I am a little worried about the bullpen because the guys who have stuff, and this was something I talked about on the last week's episode with Aria Gerson from the Tennessean, the guys who have stuff don't throw enough strikes, and the guys who throw strikes don't really have enough stuff. And so you saw it over the weekend where Brennan Cyber, a freshman who's been really good for Vanderbilt, comes in and just gets ambushed with two home runs in three batters and just crushed home runs. And, you know, Alex Kranzler, another freshman they've used a lot, is kind of the same way. But on the flip side, like, you know, they haven't really used, they didn't use Grayson Carter. Now I think they're kind of preparing him for something different. I think they're kind of flipping that, but right. Because we do have the, you know, the Thursday series coming up. So there are a lot of teams kind of doing some, you know, I noticed that Ole Miss is not starting Riley Maddox in the midweek, and he had been starting the midweek. So I wonder if that's also what, although they don't have a Thursday series, so scratch that. But regardless, there are some teams doing some finagling here, but Grayson Carter has been, yeah, he misses plenty of bats, but the walks are a problem. Ethan McElvain is a freshman. The walks have been the problem. So I'm a little worried about the bullpen because, like Florida, they've kind of had to turn to a bunch of young guys to try to get outs, and they've had some success with their pitchability guys, Vanderbilt has, but I just worry when they face these really good offenses, and that's a particularly bad matchup for that type of bullpen because South Carolina, I think, is going to struggle against high velocity guys who can control the game because they have some guys in their lineup who don't catch up to velocity very well. But man, that's a lineup that can punish your mistakes. Like they are looking for fastballs in bad spots. And if you put a fastball in a bad spot, they are going to punish it. So I think that's kind of what happened. I also think the Vanderbilt's offense is not going to be this bad. I think they had 16 hits in 27 innings, but it was more than that. It was more than the results. It was that there were just a lot of, I mean, for goodness sakes, Eli Jones is good, but he threw 77 pitches to get 19 outs, like 6 1/3 innings, 77 pitches. Mm-hmm. There were just a lot of like 1 and 2 pitch rollovers. And that's just not Vanderbilt offensively. You know, Matthew Polk had some good at-bats where he was fouling stuff off and clearly battling and fighting, but they're just a lot of times offensively, it didn't look like there was a lot of fight. And that's just not like Vanderbilt. So I think that'll get better because I do think that that approach will get better. So we'll see. But those are things I feel most confident in. I think Eli Jones, very good. Garrett Gainey out of the bullpen for South Carolina. I think they've kind of found themselves like a, not just a superstar on the mound, but kind of like a cult of personality guy where he's just a little bit of a live wire. If you haven't seen his celebration, it's all over the internet. Yeah. You can find it. Yeah. He's got a little bit of a loose cannon in him for sure. But he's in a perfect role though. They just bring him in there in sticky spots and say, hey, go get it, kid. And then he just, you know, kind of takes it
the
personally.
Moment doesn't
then.
Bother him. Yeah.
No. He's got a lot of Michael Jordan, and I took that personally in him. Right. Yeah. So, and then on the Vanderbilt side, you're worried about the bullpen and think the offense will be better. But by and large, to your point, and then we can move on, is like, I just don't know. We're just going to have to see more, which is a boring answer. But the what happened over the weekend was just so jarring. And that was the consensus. I talked to a lot of people who were sitting with me in the press box about it, and they were like, yeah, I didn't see this coming. So we'll see. TBD. Yeah. We'll see. Let's talk Florida LSU, series where I think every possible result was on the table for this series, just given that, you know, Florida's had its struggles on the mound. LSU has had its struggles offensively. And, you know, the starting rotation has been a little less solid in SEC play through opening weekend of SEC play. They weren't as solid as they had been. So there was a lot on the table here. And ultimately, it ends up being, you know, kind of somewhere in the middle where you have a comfortable LSU win, you have a comfortable Florida win, and then you had an extra inning Florida win. So basically a toss-up series that Florida comes out ahead on. And my takeaway here is that Florida is going to be, they're already obviously a dangerous team. Florida is going to be even more dangerous as the season goes on if it can continue to find ways to win games in which Cade Fisher and Liam Peterson or whoever starts don't pitch well. Because we have enough evidence at this point that there will probably be weeks where they're better than others, but I don't think there's going to be a magic bullet at this point. I'd love to be wrong because I'd love to see that type of player development in season, but I'm not betting on that at this point. So they're just going to have to find ways to get it done on days when they don't get great starting pitching. And, you know, whether it's the offense doing its thing, which we know they're capable of, if it's some of the young arms in the bullpen coming along, which is starting to happen, it feels like it's a little slow, but it feels like it's starting to happen. It'll be an even more dangerous team if they can just kind of learn to win when things don't go according to plan, because it sure looks like, at least on the mound, that more often than not, things aren't going to go exactly according to plan.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the one thing I would point out there is that with freshmen, and they're using a ton of freshmen, you know, not only in key roles, but I mean, it's kind of all roles. There's a learning curve, and there's a first time to do this and a first time to do that. And as that experience gains, a lot of times that light will come on. I think it's come on with Luke McNeely. He was a guy who this fall did not give up an earned run in all of their inter-squad scrimmages. They were expecting big things from him, and he was, I mean, just bluntly, he was really bad in his first opportunities. Just couldn't get people out. And then he came in, you know, last week against A&M in a really clutch situation, and was great. And then he followed that up superbly in midweek. He pitched pretty well again in LSU. And I think, you know, as his role evolves, that gives him one more weapon. And I could see the same thing with Liam Peterson. As he's supremely talented, no one questioning that. He's just having moments where he loses focus and makes a big mistake, and oftentimes that compounds that mistake, you know, when you let that get to you. So again, the more you do it, the more opportunities you get, the more you realize, okay, I cannot lose focus here. I cannot hang this breaker. So I think there's opportunity there for Florida to be a completely different team in May. I think the other thing I would point out with Florida is with Cags, you have an absolute superstar, and he impacts the game in so many different ways. I mean, obviously a great hitter. He's your best pitcher, and he's a supremely good defensive first baseman, and he's a leader. And you could see in that game too, where he just sort of willed them, right? Florida should have been out of that game. They had, what, two hits through six innings or something like that. LSU had, you know, they had way more opportunities, but and just didn't stretch it out. And then Florida came back, you know, and got them in the end. And I think, you know, that's just, you know, when you have a veteran team and you have, in some places, obviously the pitching staff's not, but positionally they've got some guys that won a lot of games, and some superstars. I mean, Colby Shelton is having an incredible year as well. And, you know, Ty Evans, Tyler Shelnut, and Luke Heyman, and Cade Curlin. I mean, the first six guys in that lineup that's as good a top six as you're going to find. You know, it's really good. So I think, you know, with where Florida is right now, they're going to win a lot of series 2-1. And probably, you know, if you do that, like we talked about, they're one of the teams that can win on the road. They have experience and they have those big bets. And they've got Brandon Neely in the bullpen and Ryan Slater. And we've seen, you know, McNeely make some strides. So, yeah, don't know what's going to happen in midweek. They got another tough one, you know, this week with Florida State and Jacksonville. That'll be Florida State's kind of leaning into it as well. So it'll be an interesting bunch of storylines, you know, for that one. But yeah, on the LSU side, it is concerning in Sunday's game got away. You don't get run ruled at home if you're LSU. So that's, you know, that's problematic. I think Florida just kind of took it, and LSU didn't have an answer. So that's concerning. I do think that, you know, Luke Holman was really, really good Friday night, you know, after a rough start week before. I think what he had 13 strikeouts and, you know, gave up maybe one or two hits. I mean, it was just a dominant type of outing. And, it, you know, you get that. And, of course, he can match up with Hagen Smith next week in Fayetteville. Some guy knows be there. It'll be a really, really great show for Joe. And I do think that he gives you that Friday night ace who can match up with anyone. And the question's going to be, well, who's next? Ackenhausen been really good, but who else you got out there in the pen? And that's the concern. I think the starting rotation is as good as, you know, any that's not Arkansas. But after the, you know, it's who's going to get those tough outs and who can step forward. And maybe it's not a guy they're even using right now, because that staff is, they've got a lot of velocity on that staff, guys that can come in and they have to be consistent with it and throw more strikes. And I do think that those are the kinds of things that you can find. If you have that talent, you can find guys that, you know, just kind of clicks in midseason, and a guy who wasn't in a key role becomes your bullpen savior. And I think that's what LSU needs right now. I think offensively, they're going to be okay. They're never going to be the, you know, this is not breaking any news here. They're never going to be the kind of offense they had last year, but they've got players and there's talent, and they've got some really talented guys who are fighting right now. And you have to feel like those things are cyclical, that at some point the talent's going to win out. And they're going to back, you know, to performing at least an improved level. And when you got Tommy White and Jared Jones and Trisky, and you've got a nice core, you just need some guys around them. And I think that's, you know, if they get that, then, you know, the LSU where they want to be late in the year with a chance to make a run. But, you know, the schedule doesn't let up. You know, you got Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Tennessee in the next 3 weeks. I mean, you could legitimately be 5-10. You could be 6-9. So, you know, that's going to be quite an adjustment. You know, and it's not like it gets easy after that. I mean, it's not like you're going to run off, you know, 12-3. You're probably not. So you've got to be able to figure something out to escape and get through these and win a couple of these series so you don't dig yourself such a big hole.
I'm a little more dubious of LSU's offense than it sounds like you are. I'm worried about the kind of the extended slumps that we've seen from Brady Neal and Paxton Kling. And, you know, if Jake Brown went out with an injury over the weekend. So depending on, I mean, he wasn't in the lineup every day anyway, but if he's out for any period of time, like, it just is one fewer option on the table. Steven Milam has cooled off since his really hot start. And I do have to wonder if, as they really get into like this weekend against Arkansas, like, how do you, mm-hmm. I mean, other than Tommy White and Hayden Trevinsky, who do you feel confident about stepping in against Hagen Smith? I mean, everyone's answer is no one around the country, right? Because the dude has like 62 strikeouts in 29 innings or something absurd. But so the answer is no one. But the point is, against really, really good starting pitching in the SEC, it's a pretty short list of guys in their lineup that you feel really, really good about being able to kind of pull a lineup through, especially once you get past Tommy White and a little bit of Hayden Trevinsky, if you want to extend the benefit of the doubt to Hayden Trevinsky, given the way he played last year. So, but I'm kind of with you in that an almost bigger question for me is kind of where they're at in the bullpen. Because when you consider that, you know, Justin Lohr, I think they looked at as being a guy who could be a lockdown guy for them. And he's had his moments, but his ERA is 6.5. And, you know, Cam Johnson, the highly touted freshman, was more of a project than a instant impact guy. So like maybe in 25 or 26, he's better. But for right now, he's not really a guy they can use, you know? So, you know, they've used Christian Little a decent bit. His ERA is 9 right? So they just had a lot of things happen in the bullpen that have made it to where they don't have as many options as we thought they might coming into the year. And I think it was a good piece of evidence of where they're at that Sunday they pulled Cade Anderson out of the bullpen pretty early. And he's a guy who's done some midweek starting, has done some low leverage stuff. Like, clearly they're trying to increase his role, and it didn't go great yesterday, but they clearly they're trying to find some answers and thought he could be one. And he still might be. He's a really talented guy, but I think that just showed that, hey, we're kind of open to all kinds of solutions here because we know we need to find one. So,
hey everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams. Now celebrating 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams is the originator of everyone's favorite Luxe Home blanket. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 6 times. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as its ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are each made with premium materials. Get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code PODCAST15.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Let's pivot to Georgia, Alabama. Mark, another surprising result. Georgia just handles Alabama at home. You know, one week after struggling so much against Kentucky and one week after Alabama did a pretty nice job against Tennessee's offense, which I think if you made me pick one, I'd go with Tennessee having the best lineup in the conference. And Alabama did a pretty good job with them last weekend, but then against Georgia couldn't really keep the ball in the ballpark, which is Georgia's thing, sure. But given the struggles of Georgia the week before, you thought that maybe that would be something that the Crimson Tide could do, and they couldn't. So I didn't see a ton of this, I have to admit, because they played a doubleheader Saturday that basically completely overlapped with the doubleheader where I was at. So I'll lean on you a little bit, Mark, as to what you feel like the takeaways are here.
Well, certainly Georgia's offense just jumped on Alabama. It was early, just hitting the ball out of the park. I mean, Rick Collins, obviously Charlie Condon, but Slade Alford, all these guys that are having big years had big weekends, but Georgia had, you know, production throughout the lineup. It wasn't solely those guys, and they were obviously really, really good. The part that surprised me is that Georgia was able to handle an Alabama offense, and they give up hits and they give up home runs too, but they were able to get the big outs when they needed them and make pitches. Brian Zeldin was really good. He pitched in 2 games. I think he threw 4 shutout in one, and then came in and got maybe the last couple outs in another one. I mean, just coming in, burying curveballs, and it was very successful. So That to me, I wondered how Georgia would handle an Alabama lineup that was, you know, near the top in every offensive statistic after not being able to handle a Kentucky offense that, you know, is solid, but is certainly not what we think Alabama's is. So, and Georgia did it. I mean, they didn't put up a lot of zeros, but they pitched well enough and they hit it so well that it was a really good recipe. And so kind of like what we talked about with South Carolina and Vanderbilt, what does this mean for both of these clubs? I mean, Georgia's got to go to Tennessee. Are they going to be one of these teams that play great at home and are just trying to get one on the road? And that's kind of the way I see them, but they're going to be a handful at Foley. And then with Alabama, you know, Hagan Banks, the starter, left with an apparent injury. It didn't look great watching him on the as he left the field. We don't have an update yet, but it didn't look promising. So they've already lost Riley Quick. This would be the second weekend starter that they lost, you know, in not even halfway through the season yet. So they have depth, but you better if you're going to lose two of your top guys, and that depth is going to be tested, and you're going to have some guys in different roles. So, and the other side of that is the offense is going to have to step forward and you know, continue to play at a high level. I mean, you know, with what McCants has done this year, Miller. I mean, they've got two of the best hitters in the conference, and they're able to lean on those couple guys. They just need more, you know, they need more guys around them, get the clutch hit when those guys are on base, that sort of stuff. And if they did that, then they at least win one of those games at Georgia instead of getting swept. And I think they were close, you know, and certainly two of the three could have gone either way if they got one more clutch hit that they just weren't able to get. So it'll be fascinating to see how they manage rotation. You know, this is one of those series that the first game of, you know, Ben Hess pitched on Saturday, and then they've got to come back in Thursday. So what do they do? Do you go with Zane Adams, the freshman who's started some midweeks? Do you have someone else perhaps? Maybe pull a reliever like an Alton Davis or somebody like that to try to get through Thursday? Or do you bring Hess back in his 5 days? You know, he's potential first round guy, pro guy, big body guy, probably can handle it. I don't think he even pitched threw that many pitches Saturday. He wasn't that effective. So what do you do, right? And that's kind of the game within the game. How do you manage that? So, but for Alabama, you know, they've been really good at home. So that's, so it's good for them to get back home and see if they can kind of regain some momentum that they had after that Tennessee series.
With Georgia, you know, I wonder if you might be right about the home road thing. I also wonder if this is just such a new roster. You know, it's not necessarily young because it's a lot of portal guys, but it's a lot of inexperience within the confines of the SEC. And I just wonder if this is going to be a team that some weekends it clicks and some weekends it just doesn't, because it's a roster that doesn't have a lot of continuity. It's, yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. It seems like it could be that kind of team. I mean, to wit, they have used 22 pitchers. and they have 13 position players who've started 11 or more games. They only have two players, Charlie Condon and Slade Alford, who have played in every single game this season. Everybody else has been out for at least one game, mostly just because they're like cycling through players. Mm-hmm. Another little fun fact there, Charlie Condon, I saw this from Anthony Dasher, who covers the Georgia Bulldogs locally and has been on Highway to Hoover earlier this season. Charlie Condon's only 11 home runs from breaking the Georgia career record, which he could have that number by the beginning of May at this rate. And that might be conservative, frankly. If he does that, he will have done that in two seasons. And it's just absurd. And like, I can hear the critique of, well, clearly the ball is, whether you want to say the ball is juiced or just that, you know, it's an offensive game right now. Totally agree. Mm-hmm. However, the guy he's chasing is Gordon Beckham. And that was back when the bats were a lot hotter than they are right now. Mm-hmm. So sure. Like, it is a fair critique that they're playing in an offensive environment in college baseball, but so was Gordon Beckham. Like, let's be real about it. So I don't know. There's really not a lot else to say about Charlie Condon at this point. Shout out to Corey Collins, big weekend, SEC Player of the Week, both for SEC Extra and for the league. And just, you know, talk about a guy who's been through about everything there. He's been there forever and been through some ups and downs, and they've been batting him leadoff, which is interesting. Yeah. If you've ever seen Corey Collins' body type and his skills aren't necessarily, they don't scream leadoff hitter. But then again, neither does Kyle Schwarber, and look where Kyle Schwarber is. So anyway, yeah, interesting stuff with George. I mean, George is on, we said this even before the season that they were going to be maybe the most interesting team to follow because you just had no idea what's going to happen. And maybe they're just going to be this team all season where we just week to week, you don't know what you're going to get. And that could be maddening for that coaching staff. So there's that, but for folks like you and me, it can be kind of fun. So we'll have mm-hmm. to see. Arkansas-Auburn. Arkansas wins a series 2-1. Had game three in control. I think it was it Mark, something like 6-1 in the finale? It was Saturday finale, so this is a Thursday series. And then Auburn comes back to win it 8-6. And I frankly, like, anytime someone comes back from a deficit like that, it's surprising. But just in mm-hmm. the grand scheme of things, not surprised that Auburn found something and won a game on Sunday, because the idea that Auburn was going to be 0-6 in the league just, like, did not compute. I mean, 1-5 is hard enough to compute, yeah. but like, Auburn is just never going to be the program that rolls over in a series like that. So not shocked they found a way to win that game. But with that being said, you know, 1-5 in the league is not insurmountable, but it is a pretty big hole when you consider that the schedule is not necessarily going to get any easier.
Yeah. And they were down 5-1. And when they made that rally, and Cooper McMurray had the big blow, he had a 3-run bomb, and it really kind of got them back in it, so to speak. I think the thing to note, Connor McBride started Thursday. You know, he was a midweek starter who pitched really well the week before. And he was good. He certainly, you know, earned another spot out there. Chase Alsop was kind of his typical self. He was good in spots and you know, had kind of one bad inning, or, you know, occasionally things will just kind of get off the rails. But then Joseph Gonzalez was pretty good to start with, and then it really got away from him in his start. You know, I think Arkansas batted around on him. It's just, they've got to have more Gonzalez. Certainly a talented guy. 2 years ago was one of the best pitchers in the country. Just, you know, for whatever reason, it just hasn't come back, you know, with health issues and mechanics, and just a whole lot of uncertainty around him and what you're going to get. And it's for Auburn to get where they want to be, he's got to play a role, and a key role. And I think the thing, you know, when you're 1-5 at this point, we talked about, you know, winning 2 at home and getting 1 on the road. You've got to exceed that somewhere along the way, probably a few times. So they go to A&M this weekend. That's going to be tough. Then they've got Tennessee at home. That's going to be tough. I mean, you know, it's just where does the math work? So if you go by, you know, underdogs and favorites, you're not going to like where this lands. So you're going to have to do something to exceed that. So certainly Auburn's capable. Look at what they did last year. They finished strong. They were 12-3 the second half of the season a year ago. Different team, different, you know, this, you can't depend on that. But I do think, instead of focusing, you know, on the one loss, it's, you know, we just got to play better. Right, you focus on the process and not the result, and then the result should take care of himself. And I think, you know, Butch is perfect guy to kind of foster that environment. And you know, the offense is good. I don't. Certainly, it's had some inconsistencies, and you know, you face Arkansas, that's in Vanderbilt. You know, those two really pitching teams that kind of handcuffed them. But everybody doesn't have that, and I do think that there's a chance against some of these other clubs that they'll match up better, and their offense will be able to, you know, have a lot more success. So the other part of this, you know, the Arkansas side of it, just they continue to get clutch hits. You know, we've had questions about their offense. Is it going to be, you know, one of the best in the conference? No, but I think it can be, you know, middle of the pack, and middle of the pack in the SEC is pretty dang good. And I do think that if they can continue to get, you know, contributions from multiple players, who was the guy that pinched or late inning homer? Is it Helfrich?
I forget. Yeah, Ryder Helfrich. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a monster at bat. I think it was his first SEC hit, and it was just a colossal blast for a key home run. And I do. That's the kind of things that they're going to need, right? Because it's, you know, they've got a few middle of the order guys that are, you know, somewhat carry you, but I think it needs to come volume with Arkansas. It's not just a, you know, there's no Charlie Condon. Okay. There's no Gage Miller. There's no Tommy White. No, they don't have that. So it's going to need to be a group of guys, and they're going to have to get it, you know, through the length of the lineup. And if they do that with their pitching staff, they're going to be fine. And that, I think that's where they are. I'm interested to see them against LSU. That's, you know, we kind of talked about this before we started recording. It's hard for me to believe LSU is going to lose their first three SEC series. However, you're going to Fayetteville. They're the number one team in the nation. That is the hardest draw that you could get right now. And that's what LSU's facing. So a lot of confidence in Jay Johnson to pull the right strings and get people pointed in the right direction. But there is, I mean, that is a tall order to fulfill in Arkansas this weekend.
Yeah, certainly. I think you're going to see a desperate LSU team against Arkansas this weekend. So I think it'll make for it'll be a great atmosphere regardless, but I do think that'll add some edge to the series. All right. We have three more series to cover, Mark. We will speed through these a little bit quicker. Dealer's choice. Which of the three would you like to start with? We've got State A&M. We've got Kentucky, Missouri, and we've got Tennessee Ole Miss. Where would you like to go first?
Let's go State A&M. I think for me was, A&M got great bookend starts from their two lefties, and that was the difference. Mississippi State, who's, you know, pitched pretty well, it just couldn't mount enough offense against those two guys, and no shame in that. Those are two really good pitchers, and I do think, you know, I'm still bullish on Mississippi State. They've had a really challenging schedule that continues. They go to Gainesville. I think this is a good team. And they're going to have a great chance to be successful. And then with A&M, it's the pitching has been solid. And with Eschenbach at the end of the game, he's a weapon. And then the top of that lineup, man, just continues to flourish. And Jackson Appel has kind of joined them as a fourth bat, having a great year. And I think with A&M, I mean, they're in a great position to, you know, we wondered if they would pitch, and boy, to this point, they have answered that question in an affirmative.
Yeah, that series strikes me as a classic series of everybody walks away feeling pretty good, right? I mean, A&M wins the series, the starting pitching gets back on track for the most part. You know, the offensive stars they're leaning on were good. And then for State, you get a game in a tough road series, and you look like you belonged in a way that last year they just wouldn't have, right? And I think that's big, you know, and we can nitpick them a little bit. Nate Dome's status is still up in the air, although there's hope they get him back here soon, next several weeks. But Sanja hasn't been that clean the last few weeks. And you just don't know with you know, Cal Stevens been a little inconsistent, and Evan Sieri's kind of been shoehorned in there as more of like an opener, a kind of a four inning guy. So there are things to, you can nitpick, but they keep playing well, and they look like they belong. And so I don't think anything that happened over the weekend should make anyone think any different of State, that this team is just better. It's just a matter of how much better and what that's going to mean in the end. Kentucky, Missouri, real quick. This series, talking about things that have changed. One thing I hear about this Kentucky team when I talk to other people about it around the league is that they carry themselves with a swagger and with a sense of confidence and certainty about themselves. And so this series, which looked on TV anyway, like it was brutally cold and windy, which, I mean, that's Columbia, Missouri for you in March, but just not great conditions. It was a weird series. There were some weird, like, on-field things from what I could tell. And, you know, offense wasn't coming easy necessarily. And it feels like the type of series that a Kentucky team in, you know, 2019, 2021, 2022, probably just like, just can't deal with it all. They lose that series, and maybe they were in a position to win it and they just can't do it. But this team, in a world where Travis Smith is now out of the rotation, Mason Moore doesn't have a very good start. And they have a couple of games where the offense just is doing nothing for most of the game. And they still found a way to win that series, which is, like I said, just something I think previous iterations of Kentucky don't do. They don't find a way to win that series. And so in this world where they're going off script a little bit, some of it's been injury, some of it's ineffectiveness on the mound, and here they are 5-1 in the league and ranked in the top 25. And I think they're 20-4 overall. And I think it's important sometimes to kind of stop. And because last year's Kentucky team was so polarizing, because like some people were like, oh, the metrics are junk. Like the team's not that good and they don't deserve. And they, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then the other side, of course, is kind of like, well, but the metrics do mean something, and like they've earned it, and look at the non-conference schedule. They were just so polarizing. I don't think we fully really stopped to appreciate what they had done. And then look at this year, where it's like, how many Kentucky teams in the last 20 years have started 20-4 against any schedule, right? And yet we're kind of sitting here generally kind of wondering how good are they? Are they even as good as last year? And yet, by the standard of Kentucky baseball, like, they're killing it, you know? So it is kind of a funny how expectations work, but it is worth mentioning that this team just has continued to figure it out, and winning is a skill. And it feels like right now this core just kind of knows how to win.
Yeah. It's something you said kind of sparked a thought for me, is it would have been really easy to go in and sleepwalk through this series. You know, it's,
and just say like, ah, just not our weekend.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Like, yeah.
Kind of like what happened with the Sea last year, right? It just, you know, I went to Missouri and bad things happened, and all right, let's just go home. All right. And their season ended up fine. Right. But I think that the deal with Kentucky is they were able to fight through it and take 2 out of 3. And yeah, it wasn't the prettiest games, but you know, we escaped, and all of our goals are still in front of, we would not have a setback. And if you're Missouri, you got to feel pretty emboldened by this. Hey, we took a team that's now they're ranked in the top 25. And if things go a little bit different, we win the series. If they go just a little bit further in our direction, we sweep it. Okay. We can play with these guys. This is an affirmation of what we're building here. So I do think that, you know, this is another one where I think both sides can kind of come out of it feeling okay about it. And it does kind of give Missouri some hope, especially at home, that hey, we're going to be able to compete. We have scholarship athletes too. We have SEC lapel on our jersey. We can play. And I do think that that's, you know, that's something that at this stage in the program, especially with losses early in the year, that you can't have enough of those feel good moments.
Yeah. And we knew, excuse me. We knew with Missouri that, you know, when you bring in a Tim Jamison, like one of the things that he does well is he always seems to, when he joins a program, to find one or two guys in the pitching staff that he just has like an immediate impact on. I think about last year at Memphis, they had a guy named Dalton Fowler who went from just a piece to being the conference pitcher of the year. And I think like Javon Pimentel is that guy this year. Like he's been legitimately great the first 2 weeks of the SEC season. Clicking over to his conference stats here. Yeah, in 11 innings, he's given up 5 hits and 1 run in his two SEC starts so far. Yeah. And I'm told that's pretty good. So so he's been really good. That's an interesting guy. I'll see Mizzou in a couple weekends. I'm looking forward to seeing him. I've seen him pitch a number of times before because even actually when he was at Arizona, I've seen him pitch. But so I'm familiar with his game, but I just want to see if there's something different there, what he's doing differently. But and I've said before, I think we've both said this, like this season is about finding guys who are part of the next core. And Pimentel is an older guy. He's not going to be there forever. But, you know, Brock Lucas has had a really nice year for them. He's a sophomore. Like, is he a big part of the next group of guys that come through? Offensively, Thomas Curry seems like a guy who's, you know, he's a freshman who seems like he's going to be part of that next group. So, good on Mizzou. You get the first SEC win. That has to be kind of a relief until you get the first one, you know? Mm-hmm. So we'll see where it goes from here. But yeah, mostly just appreciating Kentucky for, hey, this weekend kind of didn't go our way in a lot of ways. And we just found a way and let's get the heck out of here, you know, with the series win and not look back. Finally, Tennessee Ole Miss. And I did this one last, Mark, because this series went pretty much exactly like I thought it would. Ole Miss obviously, also looks improved, was scrappy. Mm-hmm. They get a game, but then the two other days, Ole Miss's starting pitching was not good. Gunnar Dennis and Grayson Saunier, both weeks of SEC play have not been good. And Tennessee wins those games by run rule. And, mm-hmm. and Tennessee's pitching on the flip side was what was solid and kind of kept Ole Miss at bay in those games. So it just, you know, if you'd have told me, hey, how does this series go? I think that's exactly what I would have said. Tennessee wins 2 of 3. And ultimately the difference is that the Ole Miss pitching staff just can't do enough to slow down the Tennessee offense.
Yeah. On the bright side, Liam Doyle was good again. He's getting 2 starts in a row after really not pitching a ton and only in relief. And then they insert him in the lineup. And I saw a quote from Bianco. Well, this is what we brought him in to do. And boys, he stepped up, and as he gains, you know, comfort in that role, you know, he gives them a legitimate weapon, you know, swing and miss stuff. I do think that Tennessee, they're just so talented offensively. And as AJ Russell, as we figure out what his role is going to be, they used him in relief this weekend after he started, you know, in a quick start in week one. Going to be? Is he going to be the Sunday guy? Is he going to be, or are you just going to TBA it and just say, hey, we're going to push our chips in and make sure we, you know, we maximize him, you know, in whatever role, whatever opportunity presents itself. I see a lot of that where instead of naming, hey, we're going to roll out our 3 best guys Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to have Friday and Saturday, and then that third guy, we're going to use him in one of those 2 games if we need him to win. Otherwise, we'll start him on Sunday, right? And I think that's a unique way of looking at it, where you are trying to win series. You're not trying to try to win all 3 games necessarily. You're going to make sure that you get 2, and that's, you know, it's just an interesting way to look at it. So that. I'm really bullish on Tennessee's offense right now. Their pitching continues to do what it's doing right now. It's plenty good enough for them to meet all their goals.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that is an interesting approach because this isn't the postseason, right? Where like you lose and you're eliminated. So there is some, I think historically teams have looked at it as like, you know, we need to budget basically, for lack of a better way of putting it. We need a budget for the whole weekend. And yeah, it is an interesting approach of like, let's just insure ourselves too, and then go from there. I mean, that's, you know, whether or not they verbalize it that way is always a whole different deal,
you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 Tennessee, another team I don't know when, I'm sure I'll see them at some point this season, but I'm looking forward to seeing, cause it just seems, they seem so electric offensively. And they are. So, all right, Mark, well, that seems like an episode. Another, like I said, another interesting week that we saw a lot and learned very little, perhaps. We will find out. I mean, that's kind of what makes it interesting, right? I mean, if we knew all the answers, we'd feel really good about ourselves and also would be extremely bored on the weekends. So I guess it's good that we get surprises here, but another big weekend up ahead. And remember, Mark and I have alluded to it, but be aware, 5 of the 7 series this weekend going Thursday to Saturday due to Easter on Sunday. There are a couple that are the traditional Friday to Sunday, but for the most part, we are looking at Thursday to Saturday. So that'll affect, obviously, the times. There'll be night games Thursday, Friday, but also weekend waypoints. My video show on the weekends, we're doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 4 episodes this weekend. So don't say I never gave you nothing. So we'll do that. And so everything kind of gets pushed up a day. Mark and I will probably still podcast kind of on a similar schedule this time next week, but just be aware that the schedule is going to be a little wonky this week because we're moving up days. It's an early Easter, Mark. This is almost the earliest it could possibly be. So came up quick. Usually this weekend does not happen 3 weeks into the SEC schedule, but here we are. So, all right. That is going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at d1baseball.com. A quick thank you, by the way, to everyone who has gone on to Apple Podcasts or whatever the podcasting apps are and has given us a rating and review. I don't ask you guys to do that as often as I probably should, but I have noticed that the reviews and ratings have jumped there. So we greatly appreciate it, you doing that. Mark and I aren't smart enough to tell you why it helps us, but they say it does. Sure. So, you know, please do that if you've not done so. I appreciate those who already have. Thank you to PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. Thank you to Mark, as always, for joining me. And thank you, the listeners, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for yourself, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.